Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the Central Asia in Focus newsletter. We just passed the two-year anniversary of the start of the Tajik government's crackdown on the people in Gorno-Badakhshan Autonomous Oblast, or Gabal. Police and security forces attacked peaceful protesters in the Gabal capital, Harog, on May 16, 2022. And during the next few weeks, dozens of people were killed as government forces carried out what the authorities said was a counter-terrorism operation in different areas of Gabal. The people of Gabal are Pamiris. They differ ethnically, religiously, and culturally from Tajiks. In the months since the brutal suppression of the protests in Gabal, hundreds of Pamiris have been arrested and many were imprisoned. The crackdown continues. On May 22nd, which is yesterday, we're doing the podcast on May 23rd, there were reports government security forces detained at least 35 people in Gabal's Yazgulom district during the previous week. The Tajik government says those people were allegedly planning some sort of sabotage. On this episode of the Mejlis podcast, we take a look at Gabal and the 2 years since the violence of May 2022. And to discuss all this, I am joined by Sinat Sultanaliyeva, researcher covering Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan for Human Rights Watch, and Bakhtiar Safarov, founder of the firm Central Asia Consulting, which is based in the United States, but he is originally from Gorno-Badakhshan. So thank you both for joining me. Bakhti, I want to start with you because we got to kind of set the table for everyone. Can you take us back 2 years and describe the events of May 2022 for us?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for all participants for inviting me. And it's nice to be back. I'm honored to be here with you, and which I believe altogether Mejlis did 9th or 10th podcast since May 2022. And we really appreciate your attention to this matter. So making sure the people of Pamiri region voice is heard, we really appreciate that. Yes, and the first, generally the whole situation has been going on since 1992 when the whole, conflict and war happened. And then it was divided into several stages. So one was when in 1992 to 1997, where we also people of Gorno-Badakhshan end up being in opposition, and they had participated actively in this conflict, and the Gabal was a sort of the base for Tajik opposition politically and militarily. So and that we can say that was the first phase, active phase, when we had a lot of casualties, a lot of people got killed, died. And the second stage, we say when a lot of people got killed, was in 2012. This situation when number of people been shot and it got stopped. And the third very big one, it's 2022, happened 2 years ago. Started with a protest. I believe we had literally the first podcast after the first protest in May. Which started in Barhorog region, where the leaders of, at that time, the leader Mahmud Bokirov was. And then it's spread to Rushan, where 35 people were killed during this week.
Okay, thank you. Sinat, I want to get to you now. We've just heard the events leading up to May 2022. Human Rights Watch just released a report that you authored about what's been happening in Gabal since then. So can you bring us, I know it's a tall order, but can you bring us from May 2022 to today?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Bruce. This was a really good overview. Thank you so much. exactly as was already mentioned, that it hasn't stopped. Like it's a sort of like an ongoing persecution of the Pamiris, of the different peoples in the Gorno-Badakhshan Autonomous Oblast. And again, it hasn't stopped with the May events or June or July, August. It's just like continued since then. Scores and scores, hundreds actually, in fact, people have received long prison sentences. And from what experts have told us and from our own sort of observations, right, on Tajikistan as a country in general and the region, the sentences have been unusually cruel in their lengths. So several people have received life sentences. There have been a majority of people received up to 30 years. A handful have only received like short sentences of between 1.5 to like 5 or 6, 7 years, which are still quite a lot, right? Just for the fact that they, you know, participated in the protests. There have been cases when actual whole families have been persecuted and received prison sentences in relation to the events. And then this has not stopped. So after that, we have seen that the central authorities in Tajikistan have continued what could only be said as ethnic persecution or persecution on ethnic grounds, religious grounds, cultural grounds, because the Pamir are a different, they are an ethnic minority. They're an ethnic, religious, and linguistic and cultural minority in Tajikistan. You know, hence their location in the Gorno-Badakhshan Autonomous Oblast, right? And I'm not going to go into too much detail about the political system or like the, you know, the reasoning behind the Autonomous Oblast and others. But yeah, so some of the examples of this persecution, I mean, I guess one of the highest level examples of this persecution was in April last year, 2023, when the Minister of Justice of Tajikistan at the high-level UN meeting, I forget now, but I think it was a UPR, like a UN meeting, where he just outright denied the existence of Pamiri as an ethnic minority and just saying that they're just regular Tajiks, they're just like all other Tajiks. I mean, that's a big start, I guess, or a big indicator of just how much the authorities are intent on really, forcefully integrating the Pamiris into the general sort of Tajik population, I guess, first by denying their difference, by denying their historical, you know, ethnic and all the other differences that I mentioned. And that's just one example. Then we have received reports and, you know, by journalists, brave journalists who remain in the region and who keep on publishing, sometimes anonymously, sometimes under their name, which is, again, extremely courageous and brave, who tell us stories of how people are prohibited from speaking the Pamir dialects and the languages, that there is, you know, this sort of, again, the forcing of people to speak in the official Tajik language. There is also, we're getting reports of the various institutions funded by the Aga Khan Foundation. Those are being closed down. Educational institutions, which were really like providing a lifeline, I guess, to the region, and were one of the ways that the region's youth were able to receive high quality education. All of these sort of lifelines are being cut, and it doesn't seem like it's going to stop anytime soon. And that's also very worrying in that sense. And also, Bruce, you just mentioned as well that 2 years after, exactly like on 22nd of May, right, the authorities are, you know, continuing their persecution by detaining people on unclear grounds. There is no evidence of what exactly they were planning. We don't know anything. Like, it's just there's just this sort of general sense of impunity, which I guess characterizes the Tajik government and the Tajik regime in general, unfortunately. But specifically in that case, in this case as well, in relation to the Gorno-Badakhshan Oblast.
Okay, thank you. Bhakti, for the benefit of our audience who might not be familiar with Pamiris, tell us why Pamiris are different than Tajiks.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say there is like a difference, because we all like East Iranians, you know, like that we have one root. The only difference comes with the languages. Like, let's say if we just talk, if we just get the Gabao area, we have Tajiks, like people who identify themselves as Tajiks. They speak Farsi language, and we also have Darvoz, Vanj, the kind of, you know, they say with Tajiks, and they speak Farsi. And then we go to Yazgulon, that's different language. We go to Rushan, different, Shugni, part of Rushan, and then Ishkoshim, and then we have Kyrgyz. So we have very multicultural and multilinguistic region. So the difference is also, yeah, right. So it's going to be language differences, and it's going to be religious difference as well, because let's say Darvoz, Vanj, and Murghab, they predominantly Sunni Muslims, and the rest of which is majority Shia Muslim Ismailis. So these are linguistic and religious differences. If I answered your question correctly.
That was perfect. Can you tell me who the Aga Khan is?
The Aga Khan is a spiritual leader of our Ismaili friends. So who's been helping the whole region, especially the active humanitarian assistance started in 1991, where the active war was happening. And so that's why we got to know him. I myself worked for organization for 3 years doing the humanitarian assistance. The Aga Khan Foundation has at least at that time when I was working different big programs, microfinance, there was economic for Aga Khan development, economical development fund, focused humanitarian assistance, academia, so for development. So a total of 11 or 12 different organizations.
Okay, thank you. Sianat, you know, the Tajik government, about 2 years ago, they said that this was a counterterrorism operation that they were launching. And so, you know, and they captured some or captured and killed some of what are called informal leaders out there who had connections to the Civil War era. But that's not who's been arrested. For the majority of the people that have been arrested are not anyone who ever was a combatant. Can you tell us about some of the people who have been arrested and imprisoned since then?
Yes, of course. Again, as I mentioned, quite a lot of people were ordinary citizens of Khorog, Roshan, and the other regions, right, who participated. Or we were told that sometimes, in many cases, the Tajik military or the police would just, you know, law enforcement in general, would just, you know, like go in into the houses indiscriminately and just grab anybody who was a male, who could have potentially participated in the protest or efforts to stand up to the military in the region once it was deployed there. But then in the immediate aftermath of the protest, the people that were detained were mostly activists, civil rights activists, journalists, bloggers, lawyers. And so, for example, among them, we have Ulfat Hanim Mamatshoeva. She was 65 years old back then. Now she must be 67, I'm guessing, because it's 2 years since then. She's an independent journalist and civil rights activist. And she was sentenced to 21 years in prison. And basically, she was identified by the Tajik authorities, again, baselessly, on which evidence, like, it was not released in any way. But she was charged with conspiring against the state and organizing the protest, basically, together with her former husband, Holbashev, who is also a former general, possibly related to the Civil War area, I'm guessing. I'm really going out on a, you know, just assuming here, because I have not studied Holbashev's background, but both of them have been charged with or identified as the organizers of the protests in May 2022, and both received very, very long sentences. What's especially cynical about Ulfat Hanim's case is that her sentence was handed down pretty much on the same day, I think, as the state or like a press conference was held by Mary Lawler, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Human Rights Defenders, who was visiting Tajikistan at the time. And so on the day that she's issuing a press or holding a press conference with a full press release on the situation for human rights defenders and civil society in Tajikistan, the Tajik authorities just sentenced an independent journalist who was always sort of, you know, talking about the rights of people in the Gbao and others, and they sentenced her to 21 years in prison. Other people who were detained and also sentenced in relation to the protest are lawyers who were members of this Commission 44. It was this sort of a joint investigation group that was created back in, I think it was like December 2021, right after the first sort of the wave, the first event of the last wave, I guess I could say. I mean, not to confuse anyone, but basically the recent events started, right? In November 2021, with like the wave of protests against the killing of a local man in Khorog, with people demanding justice for his murder, and just sort of generally raising the, inequality and repression, persecution of Pamiri people. by the central authorities. And so as a result of this protest in November 2021, a joint commission was established. It was comprised of civil society activists, journalists, lawyers, and law enforcement representatives. So it was at the time seen as a true sort of a joining of forces, I guess, right, by the civil society of Cabao and by the central sort of like representatives of the authorities, central authorities in Tajikistan. However, in the next few months, the work of this commission was not really able to really move forward. And it seems that basically membership is in this commission, the Commission 44, was later identified or categorized as a work of a criminal association, criminal/terrorist extremist organization. So anybody who was members of this and who had any kind of public standing, respect in the Gorno-Badakhshan Oblast in general, they were all charged and received long sentences. And so among them, we have activists and lawyers like Farumuz Irgashev, who was heading the Commission 44, Muzaffar Mubarakshoev, I'm just reading out from the list now, a civil rights activist, he received 29 years. Farumuz received 30 years in prison. Khursand Mamatshoev, he's the brother of Ulfat Khanem Mamatshoev, he received 18 years. Manucher Kholiknazarov, he's the head of the Association of Lawyers in Pamir, he received 15 years. Khushruz Jumayev, a civil rights activist and blogger, he was known by the by pseudonym of Husham Ghulam, he received 8 years. And so all of them were charged with participation in a criminal association, as I mentioned. Yeah, so they're all now living out these long sentences, and unfortunately, even though international organizations, including ours, are constantly raising this issue or demanding their release from prison, because it is clearly that they are being punished for their professional activities and there is, you know, retribution for their independent civil rights and human rights work previously, before even joining Commission 44, right? Unfortunately, it just seems like it is not possible in the current political climate. And that's just, you know, that's really sad, very sad. I guess what we can do is that we just keep on raising it, right? With hopes that maybe one day this will become possible, because it cannot be forgotten and it just has to be just constantly raised and raised.
Yeah, can I just add one thing just to Sianat's one, just addition? I think it's very important.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
So thank you so much, Sianat. This is unbelievable and very comprehensive. The only, I think we have to mention the name of the person was Gulbuddin Ziyobekov. So Gulbuddin Ziyobekov.
Yes. Yeah, Gulbuddin Ziyobekov. Yeah.
And it's all started with when the prosecutor harassed the local woman. So it was just, he was trying to, you know, to go and say, hey, this is from your local government. Go make sure. So this girl, she needed a passport to go to Russia. And when she went to get a passport, she said, hey, I'll make you a passport in exchange of, you know. So she was, the whole situation happened, harassments, you know. Same thing they're doing across the whole country. They wanted to do, the law enforcement and the prosecutors wanted to do in Gabao and the Gulbuddin. The situation happened in Shokhdara district. So he took the situation under his own hand. So, yeah, just I think it's we have to mention that local law enforcement and throughout the country treating women very badly, which we cannot let that happen towards our women. So just want to add that.
No, thank you for adding that. Sianat, I want to just follow up on a couple of points there. One, you'd mentioned that the lawyers, they had been imprisoning lawyers. Am I right in remembering that they actually imprisoned like all the lawyers? There weren't that many in Gabao, but I think they imprisoned all the Gabao lawyers in the end.
Yeah, that's basically true. Yeah, I mean, again, there may have been, you know, one or two remaining who were able to potentially leave the country, but I don't think so. I mean, it's I highly doubt it. So most of the people who were members of the Association of Lawyers of Pamir and others who were independent, right? They have all been also detained, and that's unfortunately a very sad reality in Tajikistan. That being a lawyer and providing legal support to say, political prisoners, right, to dissidents or to human rights defenders and others, that may also result in your sentencing or like in your being charged with some ridiculous charges of, I don't know, extremism or criminalization or conspiring against the state or something like that. And that's happened in the past as well.
Okay, thank you. And Bhakti, I'll send you this one. Farmooz Erkashev. He's a very interesting character. He, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit more about him, but he was one of the lawyers, and actually he was going to be a presidential candidate for the 2020 elections. Isn't that true?
Yes. Farmooz Erkashev, he was trying to become a president and as an independent, and that's where his main problem has started. And now we hear that the authorities were promising to give him some money not to run. So then he refused, and then they didn't register him as a president anyway. And then, yeah, like Sianat says, they the group, the whole group was formed to investigate this local police harassment towards women. And that, for Tajiks, it's Tajikistan government, it's now terrorism and extremism. So the lawyer, the Farmooz, who's a human rights lawyer, and he did different types of attorney work in Gabao now, and the whole group 44 is now labeled an extremist. It's just, I don't know what kind of logic is this and how even international organization accepting all this situation, but yeah.
Okay, thank you. And a reminder, we're talking about the situation in Tajikistan's eastern Gorno-Badakhshan Autonomous Oblast 2 years after the government started a crackdown there. And my guests are Bakhtiar Safarov, founder of Central Asia Consulting in the United States, who is originally from Gorno-Badakhshan, and Sianat Sultanaliyeva, researcher covering Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan for Human Rights Watch. Bhakti, I want to ask you a question, and of course you feel free to decline to answer if you want, but I read the Freedom for Eurasia report. You are actually one of the people that's been targeted by the Tajik government. Isn't that true?
Yes. This thank you very much, by the way, for people from Freedom for Eurasia for publishing this my story. And yeah, that's what basically happened. It was last year, I got a note from authorities that I have to come because I have an apartment in downtown Dushanbe and it's going through redevelopment. And I was in negotiation with the lawyers. Nobody accepted my case. And then I had to find a lawyer who was also, I don't know if I can reveal his name, who was also imprisoned for, doing the legal work. And he was actually released and he was outside of the country. So I thought that maybe he will take my case. And we were negotiating and he started reaching out to the developers in the area. And then the minute he reached out to the developers called the police, and police, I got a call from a police telling me that, hey, when you're not going to see any of your apartment unless you come and apologize, and we'll make sure that, you have this criminal case 307, paragraph 2, and if you don't come, so you're not going to see your apartment or anything. And then I told him, so in what grounds? So what did I do wrong? And he said, you were posting on Twitter, you're against this. And I said, can you just give me examples? So what I did say exactly, which is illegal. So they didn't provide that. And I said, listen, if you keep continuing, do you know like the background of people you're dealing and all this? And I said, you just have to stop this criminal investigation, whatever you have. Unless you stop it, we don't have any, communication. I don't have anything much to say. So then after that, I just completely cut the communication. Yes, that's all I have at this point regarding this situation.
Okay, thank you for telling us that. That helps to clarify what the situation is. And I want to talk about today in Gabao. Sianat, what's different today in Gabao compared to 2 years ago?
Well, it's really difficult to say because, of course, the region has always been quite remote, right? And it's really difficult to get there. And then recently, international observers, for example, human rights defenders from international organizations weren't really allowed to travel to Tajikistan. And same goes for me, even more so, because I'm a Kyrgyz citizen and, you know, Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan are both within my remit as a researcher for Central Asia at Human Rights Watch. But I have not been able to travel personally, physically to Tajikistan for the last 2 years, unfortunately. So all that I can say about the situation there right now, I'm really only basing it on media reports that I'm reading, and also, like, from my personal connections with people who are from Gubao, both activists and just, you know, my personal friends, which I have a lot, and who are all safe, thankfully. But yes, so based on all of that, with that caveat, I guess I could say that it does seem like the situation is, it's getting worse and worse every year. And there's just this climate of fear and this hopelessness, in a sense, because there just doesn't seem to be any hope for justice. There has never been any hope for fair trials, at least not in the last, 10 to 15 years, I guess, perhaps even more, right? And the crackdown on the Gorno-Badakhshan Oblast back in May 2022, really, I think it was taken by the Tajik authorities as a way to stave off potential further protests throughout the country, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, I think following the events in May, there have been some stirrings of protests in the other regions in Tajikistan. If I'm not mistaken, I think in Kulab and other regions. So this may have been perceived by the authorities as, okay, so if we don't crack down completely on this, then we might lose our control over the country, right? So that might explain also the extreme cruelty, the massive sort of the violence of it all, honestly. And again, the super long sentences that people were given. So that, again, like a warning signal, right, to the rest of the country, as well as to the people from within the region. So that, and then also the follow-up sort of extrajudicial killings and just, yeah, basically executions of informal leaders of the region under the guise of, you know, fighting with terrorists or criminals and others. All of that stuff has really left the region very, very hopeless, frustrated, and just, I don't know, I can't really say anything further than that, because I just feel like I might be inciting some further protests in that case. If I were to say that, oh, I still hope that people can, you know, rise up to the dictator, the tyrant, really, in that case. And we know how that ends, right? At least in the last few years in Tajikistan. Yeah, so I think the atmosphere is that of hopelessness, of fear, and maybe even submission, I guess, in one or another way to how the situation is at the moment. And that's that's for people who are within the Gorno-Badakhshan Oblast. I think it's a very important distinction to make, though, that the people who are located within Tajikistan, especially within Gubao, those are the ones whose really lives are really dependent on how peaceful they have to be in that sense, and how submissive they are forced to be, right? But then again, we also have a very strong, very vocal diaspora, or like the community of Pamiris outside of Tajikistan. And those are the people that I think have very high hopes, and they are not planning to stop the fight, and they keep on reaching out to international organizations, all kinds, right? Like to all kinds of actors as much as possible to really mobilize support, to mobilize international awareness of the situation. We are in close touch, communication with them as well. And of course, we are all in support of these efforts, because the more people know, the more the world knows about what's happening in Gorno-Badakhshan, the better. And, you know, there is maybe hope then in that case, that maybe somehow we can influence the situation for the better from the outside of Tajikistan, but not from the inside, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. Bak, let me ask you a brief question, because I just want to clarify here. You know, we've heard that there's been protests in Gorno-Badakhshan that go back not long after independence. But just to be clear, the Pamiris have never called for independence from Tajikistan, right?
No. We firmly from the beginning wanted just to make sure we have a full autonomy. But that's what is written in the constitution. That's what distinguishes us. That's what even the Soviets, when created the whole system of republic and the whole new borders and everything, recognized, you know, our uniqueness, and that's why they made an autonomy. All we wanted to make sure we have a full autonomy, the proper autonomy, not something like, you know, somebody comes and appoints our leaders or force us to speak whatever, you know, different languages, it just in every other democracy, that's what we wanted, and that's what we're striving, and that's what we're going to do no matter what.
Let's get to today then. You're in touch with people out there. What are you hearing is the situation in Gabal at the moment? And I'm curious because many people, I've heard anyway, many people, especially young men, have left and are leaving if they can.
Yes. So the situation is right now, thank you for mentioning about, I was before I know that I'm going to speak today, I was going to say that the situation is kind of calm, you know, but which was until we got the news from Yazgulam, that's 35 people has been detained, I was literally shocked. I was shocked when I heard that, especially, the Yazgulam is the area which is nearby the Vanj, which is I'm from, which is also dear to my heart. And it's even difficult to talk. A person, Lailiev Dilbarsho, he's an athlete also, he's my age, I met him in a lot of competition, he's a wrestler, judo person, a very nice guy, I mean, that has been detained also, which is unheard of. You know, they tell that this guy's been working on sabotage, which is a completely, completely false. I know these people from this region, that's very peaceful people. I have family from Yazgulam, in fact, my wife, original parents are from Yazgulam. That's just a nonsense. And the situation now, we should divide it because Horog is different now. Yazgulam is becoming a hotspot of that. They were trying to do the Yazgulam hotspot. If you remember, sometimes it was last year when they said two people from Afghanistan came to Yazgulam, and then they got and killed them. We don't know how the whole situation, nobody can investigate what really happened, you know. And I already said about the Yazgulam and Lailiev Dilbarsho, the person. I was going to say there wasn't any extradition after that happened, that then we get another extradition of Lailiev Dilbar. So, he got captured in Moscow. With his son, and he was sent back to Tajikistan. So the Yazgulam is remained the hotspot. In Horog, my sources, unfortunately, like Siana says, we don't get too much information, but I don't know if it's weather or bad, but from my sources, the population has lost trust and they're losing inside because it's tough, you know, and people try not to talk to each other, fearing that, you know, this might be, you know, a snitching on them, so pretty much the trust is lost. Another source says that apparently there is a phone landline which citizens can call there if they see any wrongdoing. And sometimes, you know, they say they get resolved through this phone. I'm not sure how I don't have much details about that. So the new governor, Alisher Mirzonabot, I can say that he's quite active on his Facebook page about traveling, and some of them are disturbing, especially when you see men and women, government workers, photos forcing them to exercise in a central stadium, and this happens throughout the districts. You see the photos from Vanj district or Ishkashim district, or they just force. I understand when it's a public event, but they force government authorities to go and exercise, which I think it's a bit bizarre at this point. And also, the one case that came, it was maybe 2 months ago, the activist got the information where someone put a like on one of the posts a couple of years ago, and they found, and they now invited him and say, hey, you need to pay some equivalent of $500 or $600 to somebody, otherwise we're gonna open a criminal case for you. So there is also another thing that, like, you know, Sianat mentioned about Ulfat Khonim. So we don't have any much information from the prisons either. The only information we had from Ulfat Khonim Amatshoeva, who had a health issue, a high blood pressure. So we don't know how the her situation, you know, happening right now. Right to round, we hope that they will be released because, you know, they're innocent. Dozens of people just in the prisons. There was a rumor also coming from activists that they're gonna call an amnesty and release those people, which would be a kind of a good gesture if they do. We know Uzbekistan did release a couple of Karakalpak activists. So we were hoping the government will do this gesture. And, you know, the June 27th is coming, which is anniversary of 27 years of ending of Tajik civil war. We hope that might, you know, help with amnesty of some people, but we don't know. So I can further talk about this amnesty and what's the benefits of this going to have to the situation, if you want, in a later question.
Okay, yeah, we'll come back to that. Sianat, I want to bring you in again. You know, I've read the Human Rights Watch report. So if you're a Pimiri and you're in Parog, the capital, can you speak any of the local languages? Can you dress in traditional costumes? Can you practice your religion? Or can you know outside of approved religious buildings?
Again, so that's what I'm hearing is that it used to be not a problem, but it looks like the past 2 years, especially this has been changing. We've received reports that exactly like you cannot speak, cannot show. Well, it's not so much as there are these regulations, because that's what I've been trying to clarify with the activists, and none of them could really confirm that there are any, you know, written notices that are saying, yeah, you know, local people in Horok or Roshan or elsewhere are not allowed to A, B, C, D, right? It's not mentioned anywhere. Like, so you cannot really hold anyone, you know, accountable for this, any of the officials. But at the same time, informally, there seems to be this, so people are approached informally to be told that, you know, don't speak your languages, don't, you know, wear regular clothes. And also Tajikistan in general has very stringent rules towards practice of religion, right? And that seems to be applying to the situation in the Gbao as well nowadays. So no, I wouldn't say that it's possible. Although, again, it's from what I'm understanding, it's really, since it's not centrally mandated, there isn't such a, you know, how to call it, like a massive sort of requirement for all officials to behave a certain way or for all citizens to behave a certain way. But yeah, it really depends on your luck or lack thereof.
Okay, thank you. Bhakti, I want to ask you a question because someone told me that Horog, again, the Gbao capital, that per capita there's more surveillance cameras in Gbao than anywhere else. Have you heard that they've installed surveillance cameras all around the city?
I haven't heard, like I said, I haven't heard anything right now, but from the previous reports, when we had activists in the ground, of course, that was a lot of concerns when, yes, they did install cameras. Yes, they did install the surveillance equipment when they were suppressing the protesters, both in Horog and in Roshan. They were using the whole Chinese equipment. And for the matter of the check, the Chinese government, I don't know, government, which authorities, which organization play an active role on the suppressing this protest in 2022, you know, because at that time, the activists were constantly raising concern about those military outposts that China had around the Gabao. That's what it led to Chinese really, really supporting, not only to 2022, but before that. And we have evidence that the Chinese military vehicles were the Horog Airport. They actually did the whole drive from China with the military vehicles throughout the whole region, going back to Dushanbe and coming back, and had the military exercise in Horog. So yes, the military were equipped. I don't know how much they are using now, because they nobody there to surveillance. But yes.
Okay, thank you. We're getting close to the end of the program, so I'm going to give both of you a chance to make any last comments or bring up anything that I missed during this session. Sinan, I'll start with you. What would you like to say about Gabao, or what have we not spoken about that you think is important people know?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, there is one thing that I think is extremely important, and it's how problematic it is that the European Union specifically, as well as other countries around the world, seem to be upping their security cooperation with Tajikistan. And we've published on this like a few weeks back about this, you know, the increased negotiations and agreements, say between, I mean, the ones that I've been able to check up on are between Tajikistan and Italy. Then there was a one between Tajikistan and Netherlands specifically, I think. So the Minister of Interior Affairs of Tajikistan had traveled to both of these countries. And I'm pretty sure also more I'm hearing also Germany, I think, might be complicit in this. Well, complicit as in, you know, having these negotiations. And these are the security cooperations in terms of deportation and extradition of Tajik nationals or former Tajik nationals who have let the Interpol red notices out in their name, or perhaps the some other sort of, you know, the extradition requests filed by the Tajik authorities. And that has been historically been used against the political dissidents, or, you know, like the opposition Tajikistan, so members of political groups like Group 24 or the IRPT. And others, but also actually against people who have been, you know, active, who have been considered to be informal leaders of the Gbao, right, or the Pamiri communities and minorities. So all of that is a really, and then and EU seems to be open to these discussions. And the problem here is that Tajikistan is known to be a state that engages in transnational repression, which is basically using the international system to harass, to persecute, to repress dissent, even outside of Tajikistan. So, you know, the reaching out beyond the borders of Tajikistan to catch the dissidents, again, the opposition members, and to bring them back into Tajikistan, where they absolutely face long sentences, prison sentences, on unfair trials, and potentially torture as well within the prison system. And that's very problematic, that the EU, despite the reports, not just by Human Rights Watch, but also by other international organizations, seems to be open to these discussions, as opposed to just really, you know, stating very firmly their disagreement with this and standing up for the rights of people who are just, you know, exercising their freedom of expression, right, and freedom of assembly, freedom of movement, and all the other ones. So, yeah, I just wanted to really bring this up in the context of general situation in Tajikistan, and also how this general situation in Tajikistan really applies to and may be applied to the to dissidents or activists from the Gbao outside of Tajikistan.
Okay, thank you. Bakhtiar, we're going to give you the last word.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, and as I said, and we looked after the Yas Gulam situation, like government keeps escalating the situation. You know, we just don't understand why the whole thing is happening. And we just need some diplomatic efforts here. To somebody could explain the Tajik. I don't know if they hear me. I'm speaking English. Obviously, they open an investigation for me. I'm sure they're hearing my words, that basically all conflict at some point have to end. And, you know, it ended now or not, and we have to make some kind of agreement somehow, you know, some kind of peace at this point. So will the government, while Rahmon is in power, realize and make the true peace? or will it be passed to his son Ruslan? We don't. I mean, that's the question he has to answer. It's not just us in Gabon I'm talking about all political prisoners. I personally think if Rustam will come to power, he will release everyone in the first day in his power because he seems more secure. And this is where international community, the organization and diplomatic mission in Tajikistan can take part. You know, we see a lot of initiative from UN Rapporteur Mari Lawlor and United States Commission on International Religious Freedom and from other experts. National Alliance of Tajikistan, they talking a lot about sanction that will indeed, I think at some point they will be implemented and they're going to have a huge consequences. Tajikistan is not Russia, but even though they have a good relation with ADB, now World Bank, IMF, like Sianat mentioned, which somehow they established while his son-in-law was head of the National Bank, and they have a, you know, the recent visit shows that they really love the whole the relation they have, despite that millions of dollars were stolen from IMF funds a couple years before. So, but before it gets further, Rahmon, who still has a solid understanding of situation, which sanction would really hurt him badly, we must give him a credit for that. She should realize, and that's where the diplomatic mission have to step up in this situation, which also benefits all other neighbors as well. Let's say if China, we can say, hey, they're going to turn back to China. They will not, because China doesn't have that resources, you know, that they used to have to give them money. So, and having a peace also will help China, because they can say, hey, you know, Pamiri have a border with China, which is if they help them to release them, they're going to really boost the Chinese, let's say, really, they can say, hey, China is really did a good job and people will appreciate. And the same with Russia. Russia doesn't want to, you know, I'm sure they have the military base and they at some point want to have some kind of peace in the region. So I'm sure that's what we needed. I don't think at this point the people of Pamirs can do much unless there is some kind of a support from a strong nation to help us on this.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll get back to the topic of Gabao, I'm sure, in the future, hopefully not sparked by some horrible event, but we will be back to this topic. But for now, we'll have to leave it there. So thank you, Sianat and Bakhtiar, for being on the program. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Majlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Majlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.